Welcome to Basket News Talks. I'm the host, Donatas Urbonas, and I'm joined by the EuroLeague CEO, Paulius Motiejūnas. Welcome, Paulius.
Hi.
Paulius, actually, I just want to start straight from one video that went viral. It's actually on ESPN right now from yesterday's, from Thursday's game. And my question is, what comes to your mind when you watch this video? From the EuroLeague CEO perspective?
As a EuroLeague CEO, I say that there's a lot of safety protocol breaches. that's the first thing. And they even had the lights, the crackers, firecrackers. Mm. And so that's the first one. And as a fan, this is something unbelievable.
Yeah, a lot of players also reacted. I saw that Shimo Muneke, Dylan Ennis, who played for Zvezda, also they reacted. And of course, it went viral. I believe it's going to be one of the most viewed videos. But, you know, when I was thinking about it, it's a huge thing for the EuroLeague. And I was wondering what EuroLeague can do out of this. You know, having this kind of atmosphere, this atmosphere reaching different audiences, getting on the ESPN, what we can do as the league to monetize it, maybe?
There's many things we can do, and we are doing it. Again, I think we have a great product. Everybody knows we have a great product. Everybody agrees we have great basketball games. We have great atmosphere. Now, how do we get people to pay the money to watch it on TV? And how do we get people to stick through the whole game and watch the full game, because it's really intense. And again, we have this, every game matters, and it really matters. So it's a huge difference, NBA, EuroLeague. And as I said, we have a great product. We just need to tell the world and experience this great product that we have.
And did you hear any feedback how US audience is experiencing EuroLeague through the ESPN platform and the new partnership that kicked in 7 months ago?
We know that the numbers are growing. There's, like I said, there's still many things that we need to do and can do. So it's just a matter of time, you know, when we will reach the goals that we want in the States.
And the chance that Adam Silver is texting you, you know, following the game, watching those clips, that, hey, Paulius, you have some good things out there.
And then I wake up.
Okay. And there's this thing about this, you know, clip. It's also a big part of what makes EuroLeague unique. But there's also this feeling that you never know when it might be the last Belgrade Derby that we have in the EuroLeague. And there was always this big campaign coming from Balkan region that, oh, we want two Serbian teams in the EuroLeague. But there's also a lot of standards to meet and to fit for those teams. And I was wondering, you know, what those teams has to do to gain the trust and confidence from the EuroLeague, from the shareholders, and how they were progressing so far toward that direction.
I would say we need to focus on two different parts. One is the current clubs that are playing and the fans that they have and the competition that they join. It's one part. But the other part is that we have to have sustainable clubs. We have to get all together to the place where we come in and we grow the market. And again, this is the hardest part, being a EuroLeague CEO. It's impossible to make everybody happy. It's impossible to experience all the best places that the basketball is played. And Belgrade is one of the best places, obviously, because we have to have numbers behind it. We have to look at all the other clubs as well, the markets that are growing. And again, just like in this video, firstly, I see the breaches, and then I see the love of the game. So it's tough to say what is, you know, click all the boxes and you will get there. I think firstly, and what we started doing and what we're working on is what is the vision? What is the place we're getting to? So it has to be sustainable. It has to be long-term. It has to be something that grows the market, the whole league, and not only one region.
Mm. Did you notice enough progress from Serbian's side toward, you know, maybe getting this trust to get at least 3-year wild card, for instance?
Yes, I mean the competition they joined and the level of the teams they have is much higher. They know the rules of the league much better because it's not the first year and they are following the rules and like I said, they're definitely improving. But so are the other clubs. So, you know, you look at Virtus, they have great fans, you know, not different kind of fans, but great results. You look at Monaco, they have great sporting results. You know, there's, like I said, there's many teams who I would love to have or I would say deserve to be in the league, but we cannot close the door to anybody else. So that's the difficult part. Like I said, you know, you cannot have everyone. You cannot make everybody happy, but we have to see what criteria we create to leave the door open to anyone.
What's this, you know, main criteria for Balkan teams looking forward to the future? Like for the next season, is there any chance to fit both teams? What will be, you know, what you're going to look at the most, results in the ABA League, results in the Euro League? What will decide which team will stay if you will have to choose?
No, currently the deal is that the champion of Adriatic League plays and it has not been changed. And then depending on which other options we have, not the Balkans, but the whole European League, Europe and EuroLeague, and the champion of EuroCup, who's the champion of EuroCup and runner-up, and then we sit down and discuss.
We have such a platform, BN Plus, on basketnews.com/plus, where our subscribers can address questions to our interviewees. And I have to admit that your interview received a lot of interest, a lot of questions that I will try to involve in this discussion. And for instance, one question comes from BN Plus member Kostas B. What are the main conditions for a team to join the EuroLeague in general? And I would just add from my part, the other side of the question as well, with the reports about teams like Besiktas showing intentions to join the EuroLeague as well, which outside EuroLeague organizations showed the biggest desire, the biggest progress, and the most serious projects looking long-term?
I don't want to mention anybody who showed interest because there is interest. But my criteria is always simple. You have to show sustainable results. I don't like these sugar daddy projects that somebody comes in and says, now we're going to, you know, invest millions and we want to play EuroLeague and we want to win EuroLeague. It cannot be solely based on the sporting results and overspending. And always I had the mentality from previous CEOs and I supported this, like, we have EuroCup, we have second tier competition, you want to prove yourself, go play EuroCup, win, get relegated, come back in, you know, show good results for 3-5 years. That shows that, you know, you show the long-term interest. So it's not about the money and how much you pay. But it's about how committed you can be, even if you aren't successful, as an owner, because you know that many of those rich guys, they put the money in, they have bad results, and they say, okay, it doesn't make any sense because, you know, they're not taking me in and all that kind of stuff. That's one. And the second part is, how do you grow the league? So you always keep saying France, Germany, UK are the key markets that we want to grow. And again, we need to focus on the markets and the potential that that the league and the new team can bring to the league.
Dubai is one of those markets. And could you give us any developments of the ongoing negotiations, how it's going? And, you know, there are like different camps, different opinions, because I've heard that Dubai are ready to enter the EuroLeague from the following year, but I heard that it might be more realistically to expect them joining in 2025. So what's the latest update on them?
It's difficult to say the timetable and the time frame. It's something that we as a league never did before. It's completely new market. So I always say the discussions are ongoing. We're taking small steps forward, obviously, because the discussions are ongoing. But when will we be able to say, okay, the deal is done and we're ready to go? We don't know. So it can be fast, it can be slow, but again, the process is ongoing and it's promising because, again, when I say two parts, one part that we could open a completely new market, a completely new sphere it's really encouraging and motivating to have a look. Whether we'll be able to do it, I don't know, but it's good to analyze it.
You mentioned it might happen fast. Is it possible that it might happen as fast as the start of the next season?
I the percentage, 50-50.
Still a decent percentage, you know.
But again, when I say this, I say with full openness. I've never been in this process. We as a league and everybody have never been in this process. So every time you think that it's the last page you open for discussion, you open another page and as you see that another 20 points to discuss. So I don't want to commit and I don't want people take for granted me saying that it's 50-50, so it's a big chance that they will play next year.
Speaking of benefits of what new markets can bring to the EuroLeague, and speaking of benefits that Dubai team joining the league might bring, I heard that one big part of this financial proposal is that like each shareholder will get 1 million euros per season for 5 years in a row. And I was just thinking, you know, there's this decision thinking process that is it enough for the EuroLeague teams, given some potential risks that were actually addressed by the former EuroLeague CEO, Jordi Bartomeu. He said, quote unquote, "It is a very dangerous risk of inflation if an Arab team enters the competition, and also with a time difference of 3-4 hours. The future of the EuroLeague is not in Dubai, it is in Paris and London."
What do you want me to say now?
I mean, is the financial benefit that is potentially coming to the EuroLeague from Dubai's market outweighs the risks that Mr. Bartomeu also mentioned with the inflation and stuff?
We are completely aware of the risks. And it's not, the risk is not Dubai. The risk is we have teams who spend too much money. And I keep saying we need to be sustainable. We need to spend as much as we make. We cannot be wasting money and throwing it through the window just to get to the sporting results. And this is what we've been talking with the clubs. We have to all be on the same page. Dubai, if they come, they will not change this because the problem still exists. So if another part of the problem or not, we have to solve it with them or without them. So this is what we are working on. The fair play regulations are implemented. We continuously decreasing the input that the owners can make. We are talking about not the salary cap, but something similar to control altogether what the clubs are spending on the players. So these steps are already taken and they have no connection with Dubai. So it has to be done one way or another, if they're in or if they're out. But when I talk about Dubai and you talk about the numbers that we cannot comment to the clubs, us as a EuroLeague management, we more care about what potential it brings to open up that market. So we're not looking for a fish. We're getting a fishing rod where we can go and look for new sponsors, old sponsors that can show themselves in completely new markets. So that's the potential that is drives me most to explore the market.
It's good you mentioned this financial fair play project, because there's this question from BN Plus member Baris, who's coming from Turkey. Are there any plans on the club budget and salary regulations? Of course there are, but it is difficult to implement a salary cap in the league with multiple countries, but right now we don't even know the actual team budgets transparently. And there are also teams like Barca and Real where the line between basketball club budget and the whole club budget is blurred. And so just, you know, I'd like to hear you expand on it, but I will add a couple of questions on top of that. When will the salary cap be in effect, and when will club budgets be transparently revealed before the season?
I think number one is quite soon. I wish we would do it this year, just to approve the guidance and so that everybody knows the direction we are going to.
You mean the salary cap?
Yeah. It's not going to be called the salary cap.
Yeah.
Because the regulations, let's say, how much the club spend. And it's been ongoing for, I would say, 2-3 years. So we have a project. The project is discussed. we need to put everybody on the same page, and again, the club's vote. So I'm pretty sure that we should get it approved. I'm optimistic about that. When you talk about making the budget public, it's again, it's something that some teams do, others don't. How to get everybody on the same page? It's another question. I cannot give you a timetable for that. Me personally, I think everything should be transparent. We have great example in the NBA. You can go and see whatever which player is making. In Europe, it's still a bigger problem to open it up. But again, let's hope we can do it. I think this openness and clarity and transparency brings more benefits than it brings disadvantages.
Polo, did you have a chance to watch any of Thursday's games? Which one did you pick?
I was flying yesterday, so it's a bad day to pick.
Okay, but my question was about, you know, some games clashing each other, because I think that there were at least three great games, including Belgrade's derby, Monaco against Olympiacos. And there's this, you know, thing that Euroleague has every game matter slogan, but as a fan, you know, we can't watch every game because many of them clash. And I was just thinking, what has been made in order to change it and to help fans to get to know other teams more, to watch more games and to go outside of their this local bubble? And also, what has to change in order to have this more balanced calendar for basketball fans?
You have to use EuroLeague TV to switch through the games. So that's what I do. You know, you see the one that's closer. So there's a timeout, you jump to another one. And
but it's not enjoyable.
I know. The problem is, again, we need to focus on the clubs. We are the league where, you know, the atmosphere in the arena is important. And that's where the best, you showed me the video, that's where the passion is. So if you go and try to balance it so that everybody can see it internationally, you have to sacrifice the timing that the clubs pick for the game. And if you do the game at 3 or 4 o'clock daytime, you know, the people just cannot come to the arena. Or if you do it at 10 at night, also people cannot come to the arena. So the priority is that all the clubs have the best times possible to get the fans into the arena, because that's what we are proud of and what we focus on. Obviously, you know, we need to be able to manage it, but then there's TV deals, then there's different countries, different time zones, and you know, I don't have a formula how we can fix it other than watching EuroLeague TV. Not as much as enjoyable, but yeah.
So let's say it's fair to think that there are no upcoming changes in this, let's say, department, right, in the nearest future.
Listen,
the
calendar is so messed up that there are so many games. And, you know, if you have 5 games, each game you give 2.5 hours, or let's say 2 hours. So it's a slot of 12 hours. So one game, if you want everybody to see each game, some teams would have to play 11 in the morning, you know, which is definitely not going to happen. So again, it's tough to find a formula where everybody would be happy.
Regarding this topic, we have a couple follow-up questions from BN Plus members. For instance, Stefan Staminic is interesting. Are you considering for non-double weeks to spread games on 3 days instead of 2 days so we can watch more games? And also there was a question from Alexandra Schwabus. Is there any movement in renegotiating the TV rights deal with IMG to a more favorable conditions for the league?
With second part, IMG is our partner. We're talking to them how to improve these topics, and we are happy how the discussion is going. Regarding the other days, I don't think so. Again, there's national competitions on the weekend. We have Euro Cup games Tuesday and sometimes Wednesday. We have these double weeks, and again
football as well clashing.
So again, I don't see us taking this step. You have to know that Thursday, Friday is EuroLeague, Tuesday, Wednesday is EuroCup. I don't know the other competitions, what you mean. Basketball is number one everywhere in the world. So that's the calendar that's put in. And again, the teams have to have consistency too. You know, if you play Thursday, Friday, you know that you can have Monday off practice, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then traveling and everything. There has to be consistency, at least in the minds right now. And again, going back to the fans in the arena, if you do the game on Monday or a game on Tuesday, it's much harder to get the fans to come and spend the night, because, you know, you have to go to work the next day and you have to travel in big cities to come back home. It takes another two hours. So again, we have to focus mostly on the fans coming into the games.
We're coming off a night where we had the historical EuroLeague game in Panevėžys, in my hometown, Fenerbahce Maccabi, and it just, again, this whole situation raised questions about Maccabi. And I was just thinking, with the Israeli league being renewed, what has to happen to have Maccabi playing EuroLeague games in Tel Aviv again?
Everybody has to feel safe. Again, it's simple as that. We are in talks with them. We know that the situation is getting better. They're trying and looking at how to bring American players back to Israel. As soon as they are there, as soon as everything comes down, I think it's only a matter of time. The government has to show support to say that it's safe and they can guarantee the safety. The teams have to feel safe going there. But again, I think it only comes with time. If everything's calmer for a month, for 2 months, and the Israeli league starts and nothing's, you know, no provocations, everybody's safe. It will be difficult to, you know, to burst the bubble and say, okay, who's the first one who wants to try? But it has to take time and we will get there.
What do you think, how likely that we will have Maccabi playing in Tel Aviv during this regular season?
When you ask me now in January, it doesn't look realistic, but let's see.
Because there's this important perspective that is coming from one of our BN Plus members. His question was, if it happens that Maccabi, it's actually a complex question, if it happens that Maccabi makes the Final Four, does EuroLeague think they can really organize the event safely in Berlin, considering the diverse population as well as recent terror attack threats by extremist groups made against the events organized at the Cologne Cathedral? And also, even if Maccabi makes the playoffs, which seems likely at this point, will the team they are matched against, for instance Fenerbahce, like it happened in yesterday, would lose their home court?
When you ask this question, the answer depends on the local governance. So if it's not like we as EuroLeague decide, okay, you go. In Berlin, if a governance says, local police say it's impossible to do it, then it's a problem. If they say we can guarantee the safety and we take responsibility, you need to do X, Y, and Z, we're ready to do it. And it's the same with the other team. So Fenerbahce could not play their home game because local governance says, listen, it's too many provocations, it's too early, you have to do it in a neutral court. So it's the same for the playoffs. If you ask me now in January, in Turkey, it would not be possible. But maybe 2-3 months down the road, the situation will change. We're analyzing the situation every week, every 2 weeks, getting together to see if things are moving forward into the better or not. But now to predict how it's going to happen, it's, you know, I wish I was had the power to predict.
Yeah, and we all wish that, you know, Maccabi will get back to Tel Aviv and teams like Fenerbahce will host them. But let's say if things are not getting better, what are alternatives if we have this matchup, Fenerbahce-Maccabi in the playoffs, for instance?
We're working on it.
For the EuroLeague CEO, for the most people nowadays, the time has the biggest value. But I believe in your position, during the circumstances that you're in the EuroLeague with 1 year tenure, the time has even bigger value. And I just wanted to hear any life hacks from you, how to save time, how to prioritize time, what do you do, you know, to make some space, more space for time.
You take a pill and you have more time. If you saw what was the movie with the I forgot the name. With Bradley Cooper, yes, yes.
There's some effect, butterfly effect, or no?
No, no, he takes a pill and then he's...
Oh, I know the movie you're talking about. Okay.
So, yeah, that's the effect. Now this, listen, I like the high tempo. In basketball, I always said we have our life three times fast, happening three times faster than any regular job. It's just the way it is. You don't have weekends, you don't have... you have to travel, you have, you know, your work at night, you still have to work in the mornings and at day, you know, it's just our lifestyle. So there's no way to make more time. You just enjoy what you have.
We appreciate that you took us, involved us to your busy schedule. And, you know, regarding your busy schedule, I was thinking, what are your top three things that are on your agenda currently?
Sadly, it's like top nine. But number one and the most important is we want to make EuroLeague basketball tier one competition. We have to be up there, so you wouldn't say that some other sport is and everybody's watching
it's
it
a
on
long
Wednesday.
Way to go.
It is a long way to go, but we have to start somewhere, and it all starts with the first step. So that's what I'm trying to figure out. Being here, it opens up so many doors. You can talk to so many guys who know the business of sport much better than, you know, all of us combined together. So you just to gather information, to share experience. But again, I think we as basketball need to unite. We need to compete with other sports. We need to improve as a sport. So wherever, when we talk Olympics, you know, or we talk World Championship, or we talk local competition, we have to somehow figure out who's taking responsibility for what and how do we make basketball tier one competition. And that's why I'm here, you know, and that's the goal. So that's number one priority, and that's it.
But for that priority, you have to take a lot of many little steps. What are these little steps that you're working on the most right now?
No, right now is just, you know, going around, talking to people, sharing ideas, being open and listening. This is what we need. We need to be, I had this philosophical message from one of my friends saying that we people differ from mammals, that we somehow find a way to collaborate, not to fight, not, you know, not to say I cannot do it because you did not do it, but to collaborate. That's how progress is made. So we need to open all the doors and say, guys, how do we grow basketball? And that just makes the whole world and the whole business so much easier.
As you mentioned, you know, this position opened a lot of doors for you. And I just wonder, you know, who are the persons that you like the most about the way they understand this business concept, their ideology that you can adjust to your plans, to your strategy?
I never pick one guy. It's always you take 1% from one guy, 2%. So, you know, I'm just trying, again, new people to meet. That's what I try to see, you know.
Like who was the last guy that kind of, you know, hit your brain the most, that you're like, okay, I can pick this thing, I can do that? The last guy, the last example, the last story, the last article you read that, you know, made the biggest impression.
Now I'm reading this book, Basketball Will Change the World. And again,
written by Paulius Motiejūnas?
No. I'll tell you later. It's more, you know, philosophical, but it's based on the values of basketball, how it's a team sport, how politicians could use it, how, you know, everybody could use it. So I'm trying to see this approach because I'm a basketball guy and basketball freak, and I love the game, but I never thought that it can be put in a way that world peace can be reached by following the rules of basketball. And what Naismith did was basically, you know, create not democracy, not dictatorship, but some basketball way of running, you know, countries and the world.
I've actually did a small warm-up for the last hard topic that I wanted to address. And of course, we had a lot of questions about referees. Some of them were very direct ones, I would say, based on a lot of emotions, based on straightforward opinions, but I'll try to approach this topic in a more diplomatic and way and from two different perspectives. The first perspective is, how do you deal with the significant amount of concerns coming from teams and players regarding the officiating this season? And when you hear those concerns, when you watch some examples, you know, in your mind, evaluating referees and the refereeing departments, where do you think are the roots of the problems? Because how fan looks at the game, if he sees a mistake, you know, he suddenly blames the referee, the individual personality. Where do you see the roots of the problem, the roots of a bad decision?
Listen, it's part of basketball. You know, again, to quote the referees, the players make mistakes, the coaches make mistakes, so they do make mistakes as well. The fans protect their coaches, their players, but they attack the referees. So again, the only thing I'm sitting here in a new role, I think that we need to figure out what kind of league we want to be. Do we like the floppers? Do we like to play tough? Do we like to play fast? ACB rule with, you know, throwing the ball out of bounds without giving it to the ref. It's a new interesting thing. So I think, and again, you have to give credit to Daniel Herzuela, who's here. He's new guy, also, you know, half a year here, introducing new things. So to see change, first, you know, when you come, you analyze and you see what you have. And then, you know, you need more than a year to see the changes that you're bringing in, if they're working or not working. So I wouldn't say we focus on that, because that gets the most clicks, that gets the crowd going, but it's going to be there. You know, if we want to be zero mistakes or bad calls, let's say, by the referees, we need to use AI maybe to run the game. But then let's use AI instead of coaches, and then let's sit, take the PlayStation, and we play. So that's my approach. It's going to be there. It's part of the passion of the game. But yeah, I mean, there's always room to improve, and some changes are already made. We just need to see if they're working now and if they're made in the right direction or not. And then rule changes and the whole concept of what we want to look like, It also is something that's up for debate and for discussion.
By the way, which league do you prefer? Physical league, more fast-paced league, like in the NBA, or finding some balance?
I think some balance. I hate the floppers. I don't like the flopping game. And I played myself for many years. So if a guy who weighs 80 kilos touches the guy who weighs 120 and he collapses like he's been hit by a train, I know it's a fake. So that's the game. I never liked the floppers.
Regarding, it's good you mentioned Danny Herzuelo. As I mentioned, there are two different perspectives of concerns, and I've talked to some officiating experts, specialists with the experience in this department, and they mentioned there is this level of concerns regarding some developments in the refereeing department. For instance, development of the referees on a daily basis or a long-term strategy, concerns about some referees' assignments for particular games, or some disappointed that allegedly there was no competition for this position and Herzuela was appointed in this position. And the question is just, what are you doing about managing this department? How do you manage it? How are you going to evaluate it?
Listen, it's a self-run department. It's not like the CEO can come and say, you know, put this referee or do this referee. You have a guy who's responsible for the refereeing department. We need to give him credit, and we need to see what the result is. You know, you can judge me after 3 or 4 months in the position. You can judge him, but, you know, we need to give some slack and see long-term if it's working or not. Because, like I said, if you want to try something new, first you have to be backed up by people, and then you need time to see if the decisions that you're making are working or not. We have to have, just like the players, just like the coaches, you have to have a freedom to make a mistake and learn from it.
Did you have enough time to prove yourself as the EuroLeague CEO so far?
I don't look at it this way, you know. The clubs will decide. it's up for election, and we'll see. But I don't think I have something to prove. I want to improve the game. That's what I'm here for.
From what I've been told, you did a good job in uniting the EuroLeague, which was the issue, maybe, let's say, with the previous managements or front offices, that the EuroLeague was divided. And I remember I was also doing those GM surveys before the season, and one of the top agendas in GM's eyes were, like, from what they expect from the EuroLeague CEO is to get the league united. What was your way to unite 18 different teams, okay, 13 different shareholders, different regions, different markets and approaches?
You know me from before. I'm straightforward. I don't like politics. I think, again, basketball is priority. Basketball and basketball business is priority. And I don't care if you're Spanish, Turkish, Greek, whatever nationality you're in, whatever team you represent, I respect you all, and I know that you're in the game of basketball, and I love you for being in the game of basketball, because I know, and we talked, how difficult the life in this business is. And the only thing for us to unite is we have to have a common goal. So now we're working on a common goal. So again, I would take out 2 points. We have to find the direction we're going, all knowing that we have to sacrifice something personally for the league goal, and then to be transparent and to be open. That's it.
I have 3 last questions for BN Plus members, and they're going to be, I would say, not that hard. For instance, question from Emma: how likely we're to see an All-Star game in the near future? And this question is also sponsored by Mike James, who tweeted that, yeah, that All-Star game in France convinced me even more EuroLeague need one.
It's up there. There's no, you know, again, I need to know the numbers. We need to see the schedule. With all respect to the All-Star games, we have the competitiveness on the court for every EuroLeague game. And this All-Star game is, again, it's a show. Can we make it really interesting for the fans? Can we sell it? I don't want to do it just because somebody else is doing it. I want to see competitiveness. I want to see some added value. And of course, for us as a league to have one more tournament, we have the Final Four, and then to have one more event that we could do, it's something interesting. But again, it has to be not put on the priority that we sacrifice, you know, the calendar to make one more extra double week. We go and collide with the cups of all the national leagues. You have to have a gap to have, you know, some benefits for the players, for the coaches, but also for the league, you know, both financially and from the, you know, spectators, attracting more spectators, making it more new subscribers and so on and so forth.
Speaking of fans, there's a question from Alexandra Schwabes, and actually it's quite a serious one. Are there any plans to formalize the process of ticket sales to a visiting team's fans? Reference to Barcelona going above and beyond to refuse selling tickets to anyone whose name on the bank card sounds Eastern European. I've got also complaints that you can wear away team jersey in some gyms, and it's a problem. And, you know, if we want everybody to enjoy the EuroLeague product, you know, maybe it shouldn't be normal that the fan of away team jersey can't wear and can't support his team this way, right?
Yeah, this is something we're looking at and we're talking and discussing. Again, if you take Barcelona as an example, it comes from football. It's normal that they have to follow the same rules. Then there's local regulations in each country and each city. So we have to find a balance, and find the balance meaning that the fans should be able to come. But it's work in progress.
The last question comes from Žalgiris fan to you, as someone who also has good feelings about Žalgiris. How much concerns this last loss against Asvel made you regarding the potential hope to get into the play-in? And why do you think that Andrea Trinchieri might be a better head coach to finish the season than Kazis Maksvytis?
I cannot comment. Coaches, teams, you know, whoever wins. I cannot lie that, you know, I've been with the team for so long. I'm local guy, and you being from Lithuania, you know how Lithuanians are about the club. But here I put the hat of the CEO, and let's see how it goes. The guys who run the team know best what's inside. They make the decisions, and they have to do everything to for the decisions to work.
As a fan of basketball and as a fan of Žalgiris team, do you still believe that the play-in hope is real, or you see the train, going away?
Listen, that's why the play-in was implemented. And last year, take Milano. They made a huge run and changed the season completely. So it's I'm not talking about one club. I'm saying it, in this league, everything is possible.
Okay, Paulus, thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate having you on basketnews.com.
Thank you.